Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 20th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, it's Casual Friday, folks. Joining us to look back on this week that was, Digby from the blog Hullabaloo. Also on the program today, brought on to bully Dennis Miller, Andy Kindler, star of a new independent film. Did you guys catch this? Good job, crack researchers. You better check the that little tiny rag called Variety. Also on the program today, Justice Department loses in its attacks on sanctuary cities. Arizona teachers vote to strike. Ron Rosenstein holds Trump's hand, while Manafort suspected of being a Russian-backed channel. And speaking of back, Rudy's back. And while the Comey memos don't seem to do what Devin Nunes thought they would. And will Heidi Heitkamp be the 50th vote to confirm Mike Pompeo? And it's 420, folks. 420 is the date. It's Friday. And you know what that means? Chuck Schumer will be here with a song calling for decriminalization.
Because I got high.
Meanwhile, students walk out across the country in another protest against gun violence. And the Senate votes to allow car lenders to charge higher interest rates to minorities. Isn't that wonderful? The feds approve austerity plans for Puerto Rico. And just to round it out, the Trump administration rolls back a 100-year-old law to protect migratory birds from death. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, I know, cavalcade of horridness. We do have some good news. This Cuomo stuff is good news in my mind. Because I feel like, you know, this is like, this is how, we have an example of how things should work and hopefully will work going forward. But let me just remind you, if you're tired of seeing ads when you want to read the news, or you're sick of social media having to filter it for you, you go through all these dumb Twitter fights before you get to an actual piece of news. Do you feel like you're missing out on breaking news? Download Smart News for free in the App Store or Google Play Store. Get your news in real time. Comes from over 300 trusted sources, including CNN, Vice, HuffPost, The Hill, more. So a wide array of sources. Smart News' algorithm automatically curates the must-read stories that matter now. So you can get your news in just 1 minute. It's also got a bunch of different verticals. So, I mean, obviously, people listen to this program, they're going to leave it on U.S. news and politics and maybe foreign policy. Or maybe you don't need to because you listen to this show. You can look at sports, entertainment. That's the thing I like about the app, is that there are times where I like to, you know what I like to do is I go into my Smart News app and I look at the entertainment news and I see all the headlines and I just go, I don't know any of the names in here. Like, none of this makes sense to me. I feel like I'm visiting. It's like, I feel like I'm on vacation. I've gone to France because I don't get any of it. None of it makes sense to me.
I like your vacation experiences. I don't know.
I want to do this right now. Wait a second.
Oh, you're going to do this?
Yeah. Where is it? Entertainment. Okay. Well, Colbert, I know who he is. Let's see. Wait a second. My thing just automatically. Rachel Weisz, expecting first child with Daniel Craig. I know about that, actually, because Daniel Craig was Bond. And Rachel Weisz, she was in that movie about the Russian, sniper.
Mm-hmm.
And then she married Darren Aronofsky, who I used to know. Genesis Prize, let's see. Scarface. Oh, I know all this is. Johnny Demp is dumped by new lawyers.
Wait, what about Scarface? The rapper?
Johnny Demp?
No, it's a Scarface reunion.
Okay, and Demp? Who's Johnny Demp?
Johnny Depp.
That's Johnny Hemp, 420 style.
Ariana Grande.
Hell yeah.
Ariana Grande.
That's my new username.
She's a musician. Don't know who that is.
You must know who Ariana Grande is through your daughter, I bet.
Kerry Washington, no idea.
Really?
Backstreet Boys, I do. Scott Baio. Oh, this has been built for me. Like, it's literally like it could have been years ago.
Maybe it's curated towards you, and that's the power of this product.
Georgia Smith announces a new album. Have no idea who she is. Ryan
like
Reynolds and Rob Delaney's. I know that dude. Millie Bobby. Have no idea.
Stranger Things.
Sugarland. Don't know what that means. Mitt Kiske with Juju. I have that doesn't. I don't. I'm completely out.
I can't follow.
Anyways, smart news. It's available for free in the Apple App Store or your Google Play Store. Check it out now. All right, so let's go to this. This is actually pretty interesting. The amount of progressive policies that Andrew Cuomo has adopted in the past 3 weeks has been, he has already actively denounced and said that he's going to work against the IDC. He has reinstated the voting rights of something like 35,000 convicted felons who have now served their time. Reminder, he's been governor now for what, 10 years, 8 years? He just got around to doing it in the past week or two. He has come out for, is he come out for marijuana decriminalization yet? I guarantee you, in the next 2 weeks.
It's coming if it hasn't already.
But here's the amazing thing. He has transformed from a man of incredible privilege, growing up as the son of a governor, and then basically installed at HUD because of all of his experience doing nothing, and then having a great career. He has evolved from this white man of privilege into something many more.
As a New Yorker, I am a Muslim. As a New Yorker, I am Jewish. As a New Yorker, I am black. I am gay. I am disabled. I am a woman seeking to control her health and her choices. Because as a New Yorker, we are one community.
I love how he has to keep referring back down to the page, and he almost looks like he's cracking up as he says that, too. Like, I can't believe this is coming out of my mouth. I could give a crap. You know what else he is? He's also a scared little boy because he's afraid that he is going to either lose the governorship in the Democratic primary or lose big enough that it's going to ruin the rest of his political career to this woman, Cynthia Nixon, who was on Colbert last night.
Governor has called your run silly. and like saying, I don't know who you're inspired by. Maybe you're inspired by Vladimir Putin or somebody like that. Is it a serious run? Are you really doing this, or are you being a gadfly right now? Like, if you won, are you going to be disappointed? Because this was all just to make a point, or do you really want to be governor of New York?
I am 100% running to be governor of New York.
Okay.
But
you're such a gifted actress. You can't be governor of New York and, you know, win your Tonys and your Emmys and your Grammys. You can't do both.
I'm going to go see Glenda Jackson tonight in a play after we're done here.
Yes.
She is a brilliant actress with an incredible career. I think she actually has an Oscar. And she left her profession for 25 years to serve in the parliament. You can have more than one career in your life.
Okay. All right. Let me play the governor's advocate here for a second. Do we need another celebrity in office? Because we've got one in the White House, and that's not working out very well.
It is not working out very well.
Political amateurs maybe aren't the people, no offense, but you do not have experience in public office. Should governor of New York be the first job you have?
I think that first and foremost, Donald Trump is a real estate developer, mm-hmm. and he has inherited his money and his company from his father.
Yes.
That could not be more different from me. I grew up here in a one-bedroom, five-flight walk-up with a single mom. I went to public school. I started acting when I was 12 in order to pay for my college because my family couldn't afford to. I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with celebrity in politics. It gives you a platform, but it's what you choose to do with that platform. Do you choose to give yourself and other one percenters a massive tax break that they don't need? Or do you choose to advocate for important things that need your voice, like LGBTQ equality or women's health or women's rights, including a woman's right to choose, or better public schools, which I have been advocating for and fighting for the better part of 20 years? I think that's exactly the kind of resume that a progressive leader of New York State should have right now.
There you go. Pretty good. And Andrew Cuomo, I wonder, like, what goes through Andrew Cuomo's mind when he's like, she announced to run against me like 3 or 4 weeks ago, and she's already on national television basically bashing my head in.
He will have like a gender transition surgery to win this race, yeah. but will never do anything on charters, real estate, or taxes on wealthy.
Two predictions. Within the month, he comes out for marijuana, total decriminalization.
No doubt.
Total
no
decriminalization. And within 6 weeks, he amends that speech of, I am a Jew, I am black too, I am Cynthia Nixon. And he just goes all in.
I literally am Cynthia Nixon.
I am Cynthia Nixon. So
I've been fighting Bill de Blasio because he's a corporate sellout and hasn't been weighing nearly right. hard enough on the police unions.
He has been very weak on real estate. If you vote for me, it's just like voting for her.
Can I also just want to throw in here, too? Remember earlier this month, a Cuomo aide apparently said that there's no daylight, something to the effect of there's no daylight between Cuomo and Bernie. And Ari Rabenhoff tweeted out, like, that is grade A bullshit.
Yes.
And that's a Bernie advisor.
Right.
Like, on Twitter, just being like, yeah, we're not even going to do niceties on this.
Right.
That's
nonsense.
We're
not even going to pretend. Now, to just be clear, that Cuomo surrogate was not the one who is facing $300,000 bribery charges.
That's
I just want to
make
that
one.
Clear.
Like, well, he had more time to say that.
That guy doesn't have the integrity to go out and make such a spurious claim.
Imagine if Cuomo did that. Like,
right.
I'm the one who's facing bribery charges. I'm the real estate magnate making people homeless. I'm the gentrifier. I'm the charter school founder undermining children's education. I'm the hedge fund executive draining our public resources.
I am Ken Langone. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Digby will be joining us. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It's Casual Friday, folks, and it is always a pleasure on every other Friday, at least one Friday of the month, to welcome Heather Parton or Digby to the show. Now, of course, it's 420 today, and if we were really hip, everybody would be completely high on the show, not just Matt, my producer, but... Heather, I mean, maybe it's you're on the West Coast. Maybe it's total wake and bake for you on this Friday. But welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Sam. It's a little early for me, even on 420. I'm still doing the caffeine thing. But hey, you know,
I understand.
Young.
Well, Matt has been knee deep in it since like. I don't even know if he slept last night. Just waited up till midnight and then just started.
Celebrating 420 Eve last night.
That's right. He had the 420 Eve party. 420 Eve party and then like first minute of 420 party. And then it just kept going from there. So, all right. I just want, just like, because when I pick, when I dialed you on the phone, I could barely talk because I was still crapping on Andrew Cuomo. you heard that. I mean, I think that, you know, Andrew Cuomo's challenge is to, and he's not going to do well upstate, you know, because we're just talking about the Democratic primary. And the Democrats upstate tend to actually be a little bit more progressive, I think, on the whole. Than Democrats who live in the New York City area, at least maybe, you know, and we're talking about white Democrats largely when we're talking about upstate. Cuomo, when he ran against Zephyr Teachout, did very well in New York, in the five borough area, does very well with minorities, broadly speaking, because that's, you know, where the Democratic base is. And those are the people that I think Cynthia Nixon are trying to reach, you know, people living in the city. And I got to say, I mean, I don't know, but if I was a black person or if I was, you know, someone who had, you know, been dealing with, I don't know, my rights abused as a transgender person, I heard Andrew Cuomo say sort of like flippantly, like, I am one of those people. I am a black person. I would just be like, you got to be kidding me. Like, that's all it takes? You just say you're a black person, you don't have to go through any of the crap that I go through on a daily basis, and you get to, I think that type of stuff, I mean, it just sort of explains, like, what's wrong with Andrew Cuomo. He's completely tone deaf and doesn't get it.
Well, I mean, it couldn't be worse than doing what he did, and it was laughable. I mean, it was, when I saw it, I literally laughed out loud. As I was watching it, because of the absurdity and the fact that he just does not understand this modern dynamic. I mean, him claiming that is, you know, it's insulting on its face that he would claim it, that he would say that. It's not like it's I am Spartacus, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
It's like the opposite. You know, I'm a privileged white man, and I'm standing up here, and I'm claiming, you know, that my identity is all of you. Well, you know, that's kind of the opposite of what's going on right now. And he was not claiming that identity in case, you know, in the sense of having any policy or ideological or any kind of philosophical sort of identification in terms of the way he has, you know, run his office all these years.
Right. He has no stakes in any of that. He has no stakes in any of that. It's not
nothing.
Like he's like, I'm taking the subway every day, so I'm one of you. No, it's just I'm just going to say
exactly.
I'm one of you.
Exactly. I mean, just going out and saying this, you know, Andrew, you know, dude, get a clue. This isn't really going to work. And I don't, you know, I don't honestly know if Cynthia Nixon can cross all those lines either.
Right.
But, you know, what this does do is it points up the fact, look, you know, we've been now knee deep in sort of a progressive revolution, you know, for the last, 4 years, actually way beyond that, but just very intensely, I think, since the presidential campaign began, say, back in 2015, where you know, we're sitting here kind of seeing the party itself kind of work itself through a new sort of progressive identity. for him to have waited, he comes from a big blue state. I mean, New York is New York. It's not exactly Alabama. So he had a chance to see all this happening prior to the moment when he's suddenly in the midst of a primary campaign. And he could have laid the groundwork for this in some substantial ways on a policy level, and doing outreach to these communities that he now identifies with. And he could have laid the groundwork for an evolution that I think may have even seemed believable to people. I mean, maybe you could say, hey, look, you know, he wised up. He evolved. He you know, and Obama did on gay marriage. I mean, it can happen. But he didn't do that. He waits until he gets a primary opponent and then goes out and starts blasting a bunch of drivel. And clearly, I don't think he thought of it.
No, absolutely.
Before,
I mean,
before he saw it on that page, you know, I mean, this is like the first time he'd ever considered that maybe he had an issue here. So, I mean, this is going to be a very interesting race to watch, because I think what you're seeing is the sort of mainstream establishment centrist Democrat faced with how to deal with a party that is moving beyond him and how he's going to negotiate that. And so far, it's not looking good for Andrew Cuomo.
And there are already dividends. I mean, you know, with the reinstatement of 35,000 felons voting rights reinstated.
Exactly.
And that's, you know, that's not nothing. That's really good. That's good policy. And, you know, I think we're going to have, by the time this race is over, I think we're going to be very close to full legalization of marijuana in this state based on.
Well, it's overdue, really.
It's way overdue. And you would have think that Cuomo would have picked this up after running against that for Teach Out, because this was okay. Out there. But no. And, you know, I got the interesting thing, too, is that you had the unions leave the Working Families Party because Cuomo is now so angry about this challenge that he has basically threatened to destroy the unions. And I have a feeling they'll be back in, you know, 12 months or whatever it is, 8 months after November. But we'll see. But it's been fascinating. All right. Well, let's talk about, we have to mention Comey and Cohen this week, because and how massive of stories they've been. But it's also like, you know, as the week goes on, it's unbelievable how much this has sort of the Comey drama. There doesn't seem to be any real news there other than this self-righteous guy writes a book. And, the, you know, and maybe some insight into Donald Trump. But there it just seems like, and there was a certain inevitability about this, like the melodrama has taken over sort of some of the real drama, right? Like the subtext is lost on some level, it seems to me.
Well, absolutely. I mean, you know, this is part of the Trump reality show that's happening right now. There are some some extremely important underlying issues there having to do with the Russia investigation and with, you know, Trump's authoritarian bent. I mean, one of the things that I find really disturbing about Trump, and now, you know, some gadflies, but nonetheless still members of Congress who are really jumping on this idea that Trump's political enemies need to be jailed. I mean, we knew that about Hillary Clinton, of course. They chanted lock her up at the Republican National Convention.
Well,
so
Trump himself said it during a debate.
You'll be in jail, is what he said. And, you know, I mean, I've always found that to be really a bone-chilling thing. I recognize Trump's a clown, et cetera, et cetera, but he is the president of the United States, and he's saying something that is way, way, way beyond the pale, and now he's got a list of others that should be in jail, including James Comey, including Andrew McCabe, who, by the way, this week was sent on criminal referral to the D.C. District U.S. Attorney's Office for a possible criminal indictment. There are differing opinions on whether or not that was justified. Some of it you know, may be and some of it may not be, but it's unusual, let's just put it that way, for a terminated employee over these particular issues to have been, to be sent for criminal referral. And considering that the president has been tweeting madly for months that he should be in jail, that's just a little creepy. I'm sorry. And meanwhile, you've got 11 congressmen out there sending a letter to Jeff Sessions demanding investigations into Clinton, into Comey, into McCabe, Loretta Lynch, Sally Yates, Peter Strzok, Dana Bente, this Department of Justice employee who was part of, I think he's the general counsel for the FBI at the moment. And they're demanding that they all be criminally investigated, and for a variety of reasons. It's not like it's one particular conspiracy, just they're all bad. They all need to be purged. And Trump is reported by the Washington Post to be stomping around, you know, the Mar-a-Lago, screaming that they all need to go to jail. So, you know, I'm creeped out by this. Let's just put it that way. Having said all that, Comey himself, who is, in my view, a sanctimonious jerk, for the most part, unforgivable in his behavior. I don't find him, I'm watching a lot of these interviews just because it's my job, but his mission in life here to explain what the morally upright behavior required of leadership, I'm sorry, you know, Jim, I get it, and, you know, I don't think he's a liar. I think he's probably kind of, you know, he's a truth teller on a level that may be in its own way as bad as Trump is a pathological liar, because his truth is his truth, right? And so he's kind of he's got blinkers on and is unable to see the bigger picture beyond his own moral uprightness. And I think that's what led him to make the decisions he made back in the campaign that came to a devastating result, as we all know.
You know, I don't want to get too far down like a conspiracy wormhole, but first off, well, A, let me just start with, you know, from in terms of the psychological analysis. I mean, this guy either cannot admit that he broke the sort of like the primary directive of public corruption investigations by the DOJ, which is like, you don't do this stuff that you did in the run up to an election ever. You just don't do it. And it was a guideline that he definitely articulated to underlings in the Department of Justice. It also could be, and I keep going back to this, and maybe there's a way we roll in Cohen, because I, you know, from my perspective, all the Cohen stuff has, you know, sort of gets to the heart of what I always sort of speculated was going on with Donald Trump, is just like, here's a guy who has been at least somewhat knowingly involved in organized crime, working with them in some fashion, and the Russian mafia for years and years and years, and has been doing stuff like money laundering on a, you know, not a, on a massive scale relative to, you know, the perspective of someone like you or I, and has been getting away with it. And there's really two questions as to, like, you know, has he been getting away with it because there's just no white collar crime enforcement in this country? Like, it's just like, there's just, yeah, it's just the way that things work in terms of the real estate market. And we're not going to lean too heavily on this unless there's like another infraction. It's sort of like how they, like, you know, they won't ticket you for not buckling your seatbelt, but if you run over somebody, that'll be one of the charges too. Or was there also something going on with like Felix Sater, who was a special advisor to this guy for a couple years, who's a longtime friend, childhood friend of Michael Cohen's? Felix Sater, who is on record as an FBI and CIA asset, who was, while he was an asset, Loretta Lynch wrote in his defense, was working for the Trump administration, Trump Inc. I can't help but think that like something was happening out of that New York FBI office, and, you know, Sater was their Whitey Bulger, and there's like, you remember there was all that in the run-up to the election, there was like some type of internal feud coming out of the New York FBI, and Comey felt pressure. And I feel like this type of BS that you see where Comey gets out there and makes it all about righteousness is usually a cover for stuff that everybody agrees we're not going to talk about.
Well, that could very well be. And that particular issue of, you know, the New York FBI office, I mean, don't want to get too deep in the weeds here, but last night Comey was on Rachel Maddow, and she actually gave a good interview. If people didn't see it, she asked him a lot of questions that nobody else has bothered to, because they're so obsessed with whether or not he was being rude to Donald Trump by talking about his hands. You know, it's like, you know, who gives it? Honestly, the Village Press—they're still as bad as always. Don't let your guard down, because they're just awful. But in any case, Maddow actually asked him a bunch of questions that I haven't seen anybody else ask. And one of the things she did—and of course, it happened to be on the day that Donald Trump announces that, or it's announced that Rudy Giuliani is joining his legal team. But Giuliani, you remember, went out just before the election. I wrote about it in real time, and was bragging that they had some big news and that they knew that something really big was coming out. And of course, what we found out was that it was this announcement that they were, you know, quote, reopening or relooking at the Clinton email scandal. And Comey says he claimed on Maddow that he wasn't influenced by that, but he did see it, and he started an investigation into what was going on there.
How did Rudy Giuliani, who says he had friends in the New York FBI office, how did he find out in advance that this was coming down the pike?
Exactly. And supposedly Comey says that he started an investigation. He doesn't know how it came out. Well, I'd be curious to know how it came out, particularly since, as you point out, this, this Cohen case is out of the same, you know, offices with the same New York FBI office involved. And there's a long history with Felix Sater, who is part of this world. I mean, you really have to look at the whole world. I'd recommend people listen to Josh Marshall's podcast from Talking Points Memo and read some of the stuff he's been writing about this, because he's doing a really great job of kind of synthesizing all this mob connection information about Cohen, Felix Sater, and of course the Trump Organization. There's a world there in New York, and I guess I should call it an underworld. But in any case, you know, there seem to be some connections there with the FBI office, Rudy Giuliani, who came out of that same office. And by the way, Jim Comey came out of that office. He worked, in fact, he succeeded Rudy Giuliani as the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York. So this is all very, very, it's a very interesting milieu, and I think that you might be onto something, Sam, because this idea that Cohen may have felt he was protected by his childhood buddy Felix Sater, I think may explain the fact, and maybe he actually was. Because when you go back and look at his mob connections over the years, a lot of people went to jail in scams that he was involved in. There was an insurance fraud thing that went on that was just horrible. They were scamming Medicare and Medicaid. There was another insurance fraud where they were doing, you know, fake accidents, and with a bunch of Russian emigres, they were using them to go out and fake accidents. There was this taxi medallion scam, which, by the way, his father-in-law, the father of his Ukrainian-born wife, I'm talking about Cohen here, his father-in-law went to jail, or at least paid a heavy fine. I can't remember if he actually was jailed. But there were all kinds of people, hundreds of them, who were caught up in legal entanglements in crimes that Michael Cohen was involved in. And he never once got arrested or was even looked at on a criminal basis for any of this stuff. So that's curious, you know, that's kind of weird. Something was happening there that makes you think that maybe he had some protection. And what I think your hypothesis, that maybe it was Sater, makes sense, because we know that Sater was an informant. He was a CIA asset, and he had been involved in both the New York mafia families and also with the Russian mob. In fact, Marshall says that Sater's father was a capo in a major Russian mob family. So in any case, I mean, this is a very interesting story that's developing. We'll see where it comes out, because this, you're right. It could be a Whitey Bulger thing, which is really, that could explode a whole bunch of stuff. You know, let's hope it does, because whatever happened in that FBI office in the run-up to the campaign was an ugly thing. And it'd be nice to see that, you know, opened up, and let's take a real look at it.
Yeah, I can't, every time I talk about this, I can't help but lament the passing of Wayne Barrett, who was on this program in the summer leading up to Trump, and he was all over the Felix Sater thing. I mean, that's real shame, I guess, except for the fact that he fortunately passed away, I think, just before Trump was elected, like literally the day before, and so he didn't have to live to see that. But if people go back and search for some of his writing, particularly in the lead up to the election, you'll hear a lot about these connections, particularly with Sater. All right. Well, so let's talk about some of the less sexy, I guess, news, but in many respects, more relevant. I mean, ultimately, the problem with Donald Trump is not just that he was a possibly mobbed up and probably less than ethical and I would also bet illegal, engaged in illegal activities as a businessman. It's what his administration is doing. But let's start with what's going on with the Republicans in the Senate. I touched on this briefly the other day about the Congressional Review Act. Apparently, the Republicans have figured out a way of manipulating the Congressional Review Act, which everybody up until about a week or two ago thought was just a way to undo regulations made in the last 60 legislative days of the prior administration. But because of a technicality, it looks like they're going to be able to go back and unwind a lot of regulations. And this one is sort of shocking. There was a regulation put in, I think it was in 2013, by the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that said you cannot, as an auto loan lender, you cannot discriminate against minorities and charge them more higher interest rates based on, you know, I guess, where they live or what their last name is or what their race is. And the Senate just literally voted to undo that. I mean, it's nuts.
Well, I mean, that first of all, let's just point out that they found this, you know, what they think is a loophole for undoing regulations in a way that no one ever anticipated, has never been done before, and is truly terrifying if they are actually able to do this. Now, I assume there will be some kind of litigation around this. There's going to be some court cases to sort of determine whether or not their view of this is correct. And I have every reason to believe that, you know, they will prevail because of the makeup of the Supreme Court, if it makes it up to that level, which it will.
Can I say, if it doesn't, though, people should keep in mind the implications of that D.C. appellate court that Harry Reid essentially blew out the filibuster on behalf of so that they could seat the next four justices to bring basically Democratic appointees into the majority on that court, because the Republicans were going to say, like, oh, it's an 11-person court, but they only need eight or something like that. That looms so large in our daily lives that nobody is aware of that, which I find just sort of, you know, one of the problems that we have, I think, in focusing on the important issues. But go ahead.
Well, absolutely. And that is, you know, I think we're going to see more and more of this, because this is what you can see Mitch McConnell. He is just, you know, he is focused like a laser on doing everything he can to undo, you know, regulations. He's got his big tax cut passed. I mean, this is his legacy, right? I mean, it's to basically blow up the regulatory state. And let's ask ourselves how amazing it is that what they chose to use as their first sort of test case of this was that particular regulation of the CFPB, which is to deny the right of used car dealers to racially discriminate. I mean, to me, it seems like they're just sending a signal, hey, you know, to their base that we're with you, buds. We're taking care of you. Look who we're screwing first. Don't despair. Come out and vote. We're getting her done. You know, we're taking care of the people you hate. I can't conceive of anything more obvious, because how many regulations could they have done this with that would have been sort of, you know, anodyne regulations, nobody'd notice, who'd care, you know. I mean, I'm not saying that people involved wouldn't say, oh my God, this is terrible, but there are many regulations you could do that wouldn't just so directly assault the Democratic base and say to them, look what we're doing. We're going to do it. We're going to take you down, you know, and doing it on behalf of their people. Now, this is all over talk radio, by the way. It's all over their, you know, right-wing media. This is the kind of thing. They're selling it.
Well, I was going to say,
for exactly the reasons that you would think they are.
They're going after the Democratic base, but this is the way of motivating their base. And it's no coincidence that Joe Manchin's the only Democrat who voted along with them in favor of it. West Virginia, I don't know what the percentage of the electorate is white, but I would imagine it's one of the highest in the nation. And just to remind people, the initial regulations came out after a report in 2011 that analyzed loan-level data and found that African-Americans and Latinos were receiving higher numbers of interest rate markups on their car loans than white consumers. And then the CFPB issued this guidance in 2013. Basically what this did is it said, look, we're putting you on notice, car loaners, lenders, I guess. And that notice became the basis of lawsuits in civil cases against these outfits, and that changed their practices. And I guess there was like a $98 million the settlement by Ally Financial. And this is, you know, when my buddies, the trial lawyers, come in, they essentially get deputized, and this is the way that you provide some type of market discipline. But so this is, you know, this is a twofer for the Republicans in that respect, too,
yeah,
that it you know, it's a swipe at trial lawyers.
Right, right. It's tort reform. You know, remember there was a time when they'd go out and I remember George W. Bush doing this. They'd be at a rally and he'd say the words tort reform and all these people at the rallies would scream with delight. And I'm going, do they even know what that is? They have an idea? And not really. I mean, you know, they're giving away their own rights. And you can bet that every one of them, if they had been in an accident or, you know, had a case, any kind of a civil case, they would have turned to a lawyer like all Americans do when they have been wronged in that, if they can, and would sue. I mean, that's you know, it's built into our system. And of course, this is something that the Republicans, especially the big money boys that push, you know, the Club for Growth and that sort of sector of the Republican Party, I mean, they're being well taken care of by Mick Mulvaney and Steve Mnuchin and that whole crew as part of the Trump, you know, all of them, Pruitt,
yep,
Zinke, every member of the Trump cabinet, corrupt as they are on a personal level, they are very, very focused on getting that particular job done, and they're doing it. I mean, that's happening, and it's like you point out, you know, Trump is like a total eclipse of the sun, right? You know, he just blocks out everything, and it's part of his great talent that he's able to do it, and I can't help it. You know, I write about him virtually every day. I mean, he's the president of the United States. He's a walking atrocity. You can't ignore him, but it's really important that we keep in mind that as, you know, as clownish and as over the top a reality show as this administration is, and it is, underneath it all, they have put to work all of these, you know, these ideological goals that they have had on behalf of the wealthy and on behalf of, you know, a lot of the elite privilege in this country. And they are just taking a meat axe to everything that's been in place to, you know, somehow mitigate the power of that particular sector of our culture, our economy, our civic life. And when all this is done, this dumpster fire of a Donald Trump administration, assuming that he God help us, does not win re-election, it's going to be surveying the damage is going to be quite a task, because I don't think anybody really knows.
I want to talk about this story about Puerto Rico too, because it's another one that's getting lost.
Perfect.
But just to stay on this point, I mean, it's incredibly frustrating, this dynamic, because, you know, and there's this week, I noticed there's like a new group that's been put together, the Navigators or something like that, it's Navigator. And I think it's coming out of like Navigator Research. And it's basically they're putting out talking points for Democrats. And I've gone through some of it a little bit, and it's all fairly, you know, it's. You know, it's fine. It's like it's a mix of people. Let me look here. It's the people from the Hub Project. I'm not sure what that is. Emily's List, which I'm not necessarily super excited about in some instances, but from the Working Families Party, from the Roosevelt Institute, from AFL-CIO, from CAP, and from Our Revolution, no one from Our Revolution, but so a mix of like center left organizations for the most part, and so it's good that there's like people out there who are trying to provide a sort of a I don't want to say positive agenda, but a proactive agenda, but it really is. And maybe there are Democrats out there, you know, going out and criticizing this stuff, and it's just not getting covered. I mean, we have a breakdown, you know, same old problem that we've had with the news media is that they're in a business and they're going to go where the ratings are. And the ratings, of course, are with entertainment. And if you're handed, you know, an extended version of you know, Law and Order or whatever it is we want to call this show, you're going to take it and you're going to run with it and you're going to make a ton of money with it. But it is very problematic in many respects, because I also fear that, like, what happens when Donald Trump goes away? You know, like is there, we're sort of, so much of the political energy, I hope, is not just a function of Donald Trump being a horrible human being.
Well, to be honest with you, I don't think that's actually happening. And I agree with you that we're not seeing this in the national news media. But, you know, let's just look at the Cynthia Nixon Cuomo thing. I mean, right. We talked about that. And I think that there has been a success in, I mean, let's assume that, you know, maybe she's not going to win and maybe Cuomo will win. But he's now on record saying some things that he has never said before. He's seems to be recognizing that his own party has moved in a direction much faster than he has and is having to reckon with that. But even beyond that, I think that at least all the reports that I get is that people on the ground doing this work in all the special elections, this is a very seems to be an organic process that's coming up from the bottom up, largely in reaction to Trump. I mean, I'm not kidding myself that there's some kind of ideological revolution where everybody's on the same page. But nonetheless, the zeitgeist of the Democratic Party, I think, it's just the way that people are. It's anti-Trump, of course, but it's also anti all this other stuff. And I think that there is a sense that there is a progressive message that stems going all the way back to Occupy through Bernie Sanders, through the late-stage Obama administration. I mean, there's a lot. There has been an evolution within the party, I think. And I think that that's starting to really be rooted in these campaigns around the country. Now, they're all going to run in different ways, as they should. They come from different cultures. And, you know, to the extent that this is a wave election, I think that's what the Navigator people are trying to do, is create some sort of a baseline national message. And I read it, and I, you know, to me, yeah, whatever. I mean, yeah, nobody likes Trump. Okay, we get it. And of course, I think that has to be part of the message. I would never tell people to ignore Trump. That would be absurd and counterproductive, frankly, because that's fueling a lot of the energy and intensity in the Democratic base. But, you know, I just feel like these people are kind of going their own way. The way it looks to me is that in all these races around the country, that because it's sort of organically driven from the bottom up, that, you know, and a lot of new people who haven't been in politics before are joining up. I don't think they care what Navigator says. I mean, now there is a danger here that some of these groups that are backing these candidates, you know, like Emily's List or various others, they try to impose a message on the candidates, especially the new ones, that, you know, says, look, if you want our money, you're going to have to talk, you're going to have to say things this way. I'm hoping against hope that this is one election where most of the candidates are going, you know, I don't care. And they do their own thing based upon their own instinctive understanding of the race, their own motivation for getting into it, and their own commitment to, you know, trying to the politics. So hopefully this isn't going to be one of those situations because, you know, the Navigator stuff was fine. I mean, I didn't find it. I read it, you know, I mean, that's cool. I mean, it all makes sense to me. But that, you know, I don't think anybody in some congressional district in you know, Nevada should look at that and go, this is my Bible. I mean, and I don't get the sense, and maybe that's just me being Pollyanna-ish here, but I just don't get the sense that's where this is headed this time, that there is a sense of people kind of moving in their own direction, taking the initiative themselves to go out and talk. I mean, look at what's happening in Texas, you know. I mean, Beto O'Rourke is doing his own thing, right? And he's actually giving Ted Cruz a run for his money in the Senate. And I don't think that's driven by, you know, some poll-tested, focus-grouped, you know, set of messages. I think Beto knows his own state, and he's doing his own thing there.
All right, well, let's talk about just lastly, because this is just shocking. And, you know, we spent many times talking during the Obama years about austerity and how long it took the Obama administration to turn rhetorically away from austerity plans. They desperately wanted to cut Social Security and just couldn't get the Republicans to say yes to it. God bless the Tea Party for being so insane. But this is a report from the AP. A majority of federal control board members, there's a Financial Oversight and Management Board for Puerto Rico, have approved new austerity measures for Puerto Rico Thursday, saying they would help revitalize the economy and create more jobs amid the U.S. territory's 11-year recession. This is just sort of shocking because we have had literally 11 years of evidence of the detrimental impact of austerity programs. The measures contained within several fiscal plans will serve as the island's economic blueprint for the next 5 years, include a 10% average cut to a pension system. That's to people's pensions, facing nearly $50 billion in liabilities. So the way we're going to deal with not having enough money for people's pensions is to not pay them. The other measure includes closure of prisons, which I like, you know, from just a largely a political perspective, but the consolidation of dozens of state agencies, reductions in government subsidies to Puerto Rico's municipalities and its largest public university. Always great to invest in the future by cutting your public university budget. And they should. Here's the best part. The board should also said that Puerto Rico's government should cut sick leave and vacation pay by half and eliminate a Christmas bonus as a way of stimulating the economy, I guess. Now, none of this stuff is necessarily, I think, binding. You know, it just puts a lot of pressure on the governor. But this is really, this is just, I mean, full-on colonialism. I mean, this is like, this is really stunning stuff.
Well, there's actually a word for it. It's called disaster capitalism. And it was something that Naomi Klein wrote about in her book, The Shock Doctrine. This is what they do. I mean, this is just, it's so, you know, it's just an off-the-shelf plan by this, you know, sort of elite, the moneyed elite, and it's not just in the U.S., it happens all over the world, that given the opportunity, in the midst of a disaster where everyone is desperate, the whole place has been leveled, whether it's through war or through a natural disaster, and you go in with this rebuilding plan to, you know, quote, rebuild it in the image of, you know, I don't know, the World Bank circa 1992 or something. This is a nightmare. And but they tried it. Remember back in 2005 after Hurricane Katrina, George W. Bush assigned Karl Rove to be in charge of the rebuilding, and they were going to go in and do all this stuff. They were going to destroy the public school system. They were going to create these, you know, bizarre new housing requirements, very, very similar to what we're seeing in Puerto Rico. And it was stopped at the time because, you know, Bush was losing popularity, you know, just he was losing 10 points a week at that point. And they ended up kind of, you know, we had the U.S. Congress kind of stepping in. There was a lot of, and then coming up to the 2006 election, where the Democrats took over the Congress, they were able to kind of put some roadblocks on that. And, you know, but notice that in the end, there were Democratic representatives in Louisiana that are no longer there. It's all Republicans. And, you know, that was sort of part of their master plan as well. One of the things they try to do in this, and this is a very interesting thing in terms of Puerto Rico, one of the things they try to do in a disaster capitalist situation is create a diaspora of local citizens that would vote for the other party, right? I mean, this is like in New Orleans, it's obvious. They sent a bunch of African Americans there to other parts of the country, made it very difficult for there to come back. Remember, they yep. didn't bother to rebuild, and they, you know, they took forever, and there were lawsuits and, you know, legal hassles. So they wanted to, what they basically were trying to do was drain the state, and New Orleans in particular, that was the hub of the Democratic power base in Louisiana, and that was where there were all the Democratic voters were. So, you know, they're off in Houston, Cleveland, wherever now, and they start settling in, making new lives, and they don't come back to New Orleans. Well, Puerto Rico has had the same thing happen. They lost over 300,000 people in that diaspora after Hurricane Maria. And they went to Miami, they went to New York, they went to various other places. They are American citizens. They can move wherever they want. They can live in the United States wherever they want. And by the way, while they're in the United States, as residents, they can
vote have meaningful representation for the first time.
Absolutely. And so, you know, Trump may be making a little bit of a mistake here, because that diaspora that they've created doesn't really dilute the Puerto Rican vote. What it does is it gives it a franchise for the first time. And he may find, particularly Florida, which, by the way, was very close in the 2016 election, and, you know, there's big elections happening there for governor in 2018 and, of course, 2020 coming up. There are a lot of Puerto Ricans there, and the same thing is happening to them. By making Puerto Rico uninhabitable, a lot of those people, I mean, they got to live, right? They've got to have jobs. They've got to raise their kids. They need education. They need, you know, medical care, all the normal stuff. By turning Puerto Rico into this austerity hellhole down there, they're basically saying to Puerto Ricans, hey, you know, better live on the mainland, where go live in Florida or go live in California, New York, wherever. And that means they can vote. And I just have a feeling that those Puerto Ricans aren't going to be too impressed with Donald Trump. I just have a feeling.
Yep.
And in fact, the population in Florida of you know, people of Puerto Rico and population down there, they're all Democrats. They're not like the Cubans. They're Democrats. So he may come to regret this one. This one may not work out as nicely for them as they think.
You know, what's just, and I just, and just, to, they're looking to generate $460 million in savings over the next 5 years out of basically cutting bonuses and services and labor changes. Which is basically just cuts to workers' pay. There is like billions of dollars owed to hedge funders who have come in there now and bought the debt on, you know, pennies on the dollar to basically, you know, pick this stuff up and try and arbitrage the, you know, the difference between this sort of debt that other people had sort of sloughed off. And the idea that you would cut people's pensions or their Christmas bonuses before you would just simply say to those people who are owed this money, and remember, these aren't even people who originally lent the money. These are people who bought the debt from other people. And so they're not in it for the original amount of the debt. The idea that you would cut workers' pay before you would say to those hedge funds, sorry, looks like you're not getting 25% returns in your carried interest loophole tax. I mean, it's just, this is how effed up everything is. And this is at the heart of a lot of the problems we have in this country. And it's just being literally right now, it's just offshored, right? Like this project is just happening and nobody pays attention to it. It's really it's appalling. It's really appalling. But,
I mean, well, there's, you know, the image, there was the image of George W. Bush overlooking the devastation of Katrina. The image of Donald Trump throwing paper towels at people's heads in Puerto Rico, I think, will be enduring. The problem, of course, with Trump, again, is that he's a total eclipse of the sun, and there's so many of those images with him that this one doesn't have the power that it would have in a, you know, in what we used to think of as a normal presidency. But it's there. It'll be part of it. And you know, he's just, in this respect, he's just fulfilling the Republican agenda.
But we should also be clear that this is not just Republicans. Like, this is a systemic problem that we have in this country. And that's something to keep in mind. And hopefully, I don't know, I just can't believe there's been so little discussion about it in the media and by our politicians, because this is just, it's just unbelievable. But hopefully we'll see Puerto Ricans voting in a way that makes it an issue, at least in Florida, maybe.
I hope so. I mean, to me, this is, you know, that may be the one upside to all of this, is that they get to make their voices known. And if Democrats do ever take over the government again with any power, Puerto Rico should be at the top of their agenda, and there should be a lot of discussion about statehood and various other things. It's good. Yep. It would be good for them and good for us, good for America, to have Puerto Rico as a state. I mean, it would be. And you know, these are Americans. They should have all the rights that everybody else has. And as we can see, they don't, because we had several hurricanes last year. And they were all devastating, none quite so bad as Maria, but the floods and the hurricane in Texas was very bad, and those places are recovering nicely. Maria is still, they just had a full island blackout.
Full island blackout.
Just this week.
Yep.
You know, I mean, they still haven't done it. And we know that there's been a bunch of crony, you know, contracts and all kinds of stuff to try and fix up the infrastructure down there. And they're obviously doing a bad job of it, unsurprisingly.
Digby, always a pleasure, often slightly depressing at times. But
I'm sorry, that's Sam. We'll talk about kittens next time.
All right.
Okay?
Next time, it's a full hour of kitten talk.
Okay.
Heather Parton, folks, check out.
I will be there for that.
Check out Hullabaloo and Digby's writing on salon.com. Thanks again, Digby. I always appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me.
Bye bye. All right, folks. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Andy Kindler. Maybe we'll let Andy listen to the Jimmy Reefer Cake song, too. And there's a lot of ground that we need to cover with Andy Kindler, not the least of which this breaking story in Variety about Andy Kindler, and, of course, the latest from Dennis Miller. We've got a lot of work to do, folks. So take a break. Go to the bathroom if you have to right now. Because we're in it for the long haul today. Be right back after this.
Christmas tree with blinking lights.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is the country is, of course, under siege in many respects. We have all of this bad news. But the good thing is that this song and its subject still exist and walk amongst us.
With a Jew like Andy Kindler, you know you can't go wrong. His ancestors wrote the God Bless America song. A true Obama bot, and he believes Obama can never be wrong. Yeah, AndyKindler.com. You made me laugh so hard, I had to write you your theme song, Andy Kindler.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, Andy Kindler. Hello, Andy. If we can still
cry when I hear that.
If we can still call you that now that you are so prominently featured in a Variety magazine, if we're still allowed, can we pop up this headline?
Hold on a second, Sam. Hold on a second. $100,000? You tell that jerk, if I don't get $600,000 and a honey wagon, there's no deal. I'm sorry, Sam.
Do you actually? I was going to say, do you actually slum it by discussing your accommodations? Like I would imagine your peeps handle the honey wagon shit.
I don't want an old coffee maker in the green room, all right, Schmicky? And three towels, that's right.
What now, will you explain to the uninitiated what a honey wagon is as opposed to like a one banger?
A honey wagon is a, the only reason why I even know the word is because the last
don't
time
play
I was
it
on,
off. Don't play it off. Don't play it off. Don't play it off. Come on.
The last time I was on the set, yes. I got lost from my trailer, and they said, "Are you in the honey wagon?" And I said, cool. And I guess it's something like a trailer, but I think you have access to honey. It's like on a set. What do you think it is?
Honey wagon production. They're the big 10 room. You know, the big luxury
the whole thing.
Yeah, the restrooms.
It's called it's a bathroom.
Yeah.
Oh,
I believe so. I believe the honey wagon is actually the one that has.
So you want like a guy, like an attendant, to hand you paper towels and stuff, Andy? That's one of the most awkward things I've ever encountered in my life. Like at clubs that still do that. They have guys waiting there.
Well, I like it. I like when my right-wing friend will yell at the guy, get a job. That's what I like. You know what I mean? Cause big scene in there.
Now,
no, hey, should.
Andy, there's a lot of people who really wanted me to take you to task on this report in Variety.
Things are happening for me, Sam. And the only thing is I hope that we can remain as close as we were before all these wonderful things happened to me. But I can't guarantee it.
All right, well, first off, my understanding is you are now going to be starring in the independent comedy film called The Fiddling Horse. Tell us about
it. You said that. It's not Hebrew. Why'd you say horse?
Well, your character's name is Barry Bitterman.
Barry Bitterman. It's a real name, too.
Is it really?
I know I'm, but I wouldn't say I'm, I guess maybe I am. You know, maybe I am. I mean, I know I'm a star, Sam.
Well, Andy, I'm going to read from Variety. The headline is Andy Kindler to star in dark comedy. I'm not making this up.
Now, when you say headline, is that the front? Is that above the fold?
That is the headline. That's literally, everyone knows what a headline is. Now, why are you being so evasive? I told people I wasn't going to treat you with kid gloves in this.
I'll tell you, here's the problem. I've never been in a movie.
Period.
I have never, I don't even go to movies anymore. So this is the first time I'm going to be in a movie. And I'm afraid that something will happen. Bad. Someone will figure out that I'm not really a star.
Well, here's the problem, Andy. Okay, I'm looking at this.
Yeah, talk to me.
Okay, paragraph 3, the third graph, after the first one says you're going to star in this, and then explains what Fiddling Horse is and the character you're going to be playing. And then it says...
So tell the people, tell the uninitiated what Fiddling Horse means.
Well, it is it's a horse that apparently is like fiddling around and not doing anything.
Good.
Okay, so it's a racehorse story. Kindler currently recurs on Fox's animated series Bob Burgers. I'm on that show. I don't consider myself.
I don't know if you recur.
Recurring.
Buddy.
I mean, I'm on as much as you are. So you're obviously willing to stretch the truth here a little bit with this stuff.
Well, my credit says recurring. When have you seen when it goes by?
No, I haven't. Does it really say recurring? No.
No, it does not.
Okay, you son of a bitch. Now, you're also on Showtime's I'm Dying Up Here. I don't know what that is. Comedy Central's Tosh.
That's a new show. You know what that is. That's a new show about the comedy, you know, like about the Comedy Store in the 70s. Nope. I'm on the second season.
Didn't see that.
No.
Comedy Central's
Tosh.0.
Yep. He's also a regular on the web series, But I'm Chris Jericho. And he's previously appeared on Everybody Loves Raymond. Everybody remembers that. The Daily Show. I don't know why he didn't put in the thing about the kids show with What's-Her-Face. Late Night with David Letterman.
What was that?
Oh, yeah, here it is. Wizards of Waverly Place. It is in there.
I don't like to toot my own horn, Sam.
Yeah.
I have someone in a Variety who does it.
There's something missing.
Like what? Majority Report?
Yeah, I mean, come on, Andy.
Oh, I don't want my politics out there. You know, with me and politics and show business is a separate thing.
Actually,
you really do keep it separate.
Wait, I was going to say, I actually had a serious question about that, Andy, because, I mean, I'm also offended, but I have a little bit more of an ability to separate my emotions from this than Sam does. But bigger picture question, now that you're a movie star, can you still terrorize CNN anchors on Twitter?
CNN. Wait, who did I do that? What was the last guy?
I can't even keep track. Oh yeah, Chris Cuomo. That's your ballywick. You really don't like that guy.
I feel bad about that now. He's an attractive man. He's upbeat. The worst thing he does is when there's a whole panel of people talking, and then Chris Cuomo comes in with, "All right, let's really say what's important here, because all you people haven't really gotten to the heart." I mean, he's got a little bit of an ego. Is all.
I like. You hate Chris Cuomo as much as we hate Andrew Cuomo, which I think really gets to the heart of it.
Is there another Cuomo? I do like Mario Cuomo.
the dad was better than the kids, right?
Slightly overrated though. But now, let's talk about this movie for a second.
Slightly overrated because he never really did much.
Fiddling Horse. Okay. Apparently, the director. Did a documentary, that was his first film. It was at last year's Orlando Film Festival. Who's the Caboose also went to the Orlando Film Festival, if you want to know.
He's still going with, he's can't let Who's the Caboose go. It's unbelievable. Every party since 1987, he brings up Who's the Caboose. I did a show with Sarah Silverman. Perhaps you saw it. Who's the Caboose? Right. Or maybe you knew it as Pilot Season. Okay, no, it was okay. Very good. It was
I remember Sarah Silverman did that in a movie.
It was a movie.
And people were involved and it influenced everybody.
Perfect Bid explores how Ted Slauson became adept at recording and memorizing prices of products featured on The Price is Right since its inception in 72.
This is a great documentary.
Culminating him helping a he does a good documentary. They give him a feature film deal?
I don't know how he does it. But I went to see that documentary, and it was really, really good. Because if you don't like Drew Carey, you might not like him even a little bit less.
Oh, is that right? So wait a second. Tell us about the audition. How did you get this role?
Oh, I don't audition. Are you kidding me? Here's my impression of me at every audition I've ever been at, all right? Yes, I get it. You don't think I'm a very good actor. I understand it. Yes.
And this is before you actually audition. This is before you actually audition.
Oh, no, after. Or before I go, I get it. I see what the stairs are all about. I didn't do very well. I don't do very well as an auditioner, but it doesn't work. But I don't know what I'm talking about.
So what happens?
No audition. Because this is the guy. This guy, C.J. Wallace, if I can be completely serious, which I think I've been unintentionally so far. I love this. He's a kid. These are kids. He's a kid. He's an up-and-comer. He's a mover and shaker. What do you think, Martin Scorsese is going to give me a role in whatever he's doing?
I could totally see you being some, like, you own, like, a jacuzzi rental place in Queens and somebody needs to, like, strangle you to death in the 50. Like, I told you I'd have the money. But you went to the fucking tracks again, did you?
The only thing that's true about that is I will eventually be at one of those places in Queens.
So
I sold you a hot tub. I didn't say it was going to be a miracle. It's a hot tub.
The thing is, it fucking leaks every day. My wife's going to get injured in it. Throw this prick in the trunk. No. I'll get you double on the VIG.
Look, ma'am, there's mold and there's mold. What are you telling me?
Oh, my God. How has this not happened?
Andy, it will happen. Andy has a hot tub store in Encino right now. He's just sort of building up to get it to open in Queens.
You know what I'm doing now? It's really taking off. It's you know how the street trucks are taking off? I'm just doing street truck garage sales. I just drive around town with all my belongings.
That joke wasn't good,
and I knew it as I was saying it.
Now, Andy, you're in Austin, Texas, right? Ostensibly a stand-up show. Is that right?
Moontown at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival, and everyone in the
How many comedy festivals they have in Austin? It feels like every other week it's a comedy festival there.
Well, that's what you do towards the end of your career, Sam. As you go around town, you get awards for being in the business. And this Andy Kindler gets the been in the business for the longest time without making progress award.
Did you get an award at the Comedy Festival? You did.
Yeah, a least annoying Jew of that generation. I'm up
seriously?
For that.
Wow.
No. This is big time. I have my face. I'm going to send this to Ricky Gervais. There's a poster of me somewhere around town. I haven't found it yet, and I've been looking all day.
And you've been told about this, and Gervais, this is going to rub it right into his face, right? Now I have to say, I noticed actually, and I don't have any of the, I don't have this in front of me, but over the past couple of weeks, maybe it was about like 2 or 3 weeks ago, I saw a piece. What happened to Ricky Gervais? I feel like you have fundamentally altered the world's consciousness about this guy.
I love that you call him Gervais. That makes me so happy.
What's his name? Gervais? Is it? Well, look.
That makes the bit funnier.
In Worcester, I grew up with a bunch of French Canadians, so I say Gervais.
Hey, you know what, though? I did watch his last special. I forced myself to watch it. And you know what?
What?
This guy's not afraid to take on trans people. Sorry, trans people.
You know what else he did in that special, which I heard was, I haven't watched it, but I think, gotta say,
it's so bad.
I gotta say,
literally, Yeah.
Yeah, no, credit where credit is due. I think that the fact that in a room full of his fans, he said that, like, the Bible was stupid and Sharia wasn't a good idea. That was
pretty
ballsy.
Right?
Whoa. Who would have ever thought? I mean, you know, it would be really, if he actually went up there and was like, I'm going to make the case for creationism, you cunts. That would be pretty, that would be
right.
bold.
Right.
But instead, he does a bit about, he picks on Caitlyn Jenner. Well, I mean, really goes for the high targets. And then he does about if I can be a trans person, why can't I turn into a monkey or something? He literally did a bit like, oh, you want to change yourself? Now I'm a monkey. I don't know what the word he used, bobo. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Bonobo.
So he was basically saying. Bonobo. So he's basically saying that that gender and species are the same sort of like a divide to cross. Is that what?
You know what he's saying?
You know
he's
where?
Saying,
you know where that
you
would be a super.
That, are you offended? Good.
You know where that would be. You know where that would be a super edgy thing to say in a scientist convention. That's where you. Would be, that's where people would go like, "Oh my god!"
He's so
not
terrible.
With a bunch of
he
yahoos
might be the worst
who come
I've
to your
seen.
Comedy
he is the worst
show.
He is no longer the old Ricky Gervais. Ugh. It's over.
He is. Gervais has really turned.
Yeah. Oy vey, Gervais.
Yeah.
All right. How about we leave it there?
Speaking of which,
can we cast
criticism? Probably hits the mark.
Can we cast Andy in a role where he's a jacuzzi tub salesman who gets strangled the first 20 minutes again?
Now,
I'm selling you a jacuzzi, not heaven.
Andy, now that we have dispensed with the frivolities and the formalities and the platitudes, let's get down to business. Everyone knows that your real calling, when you're not smacking Ricky Gervais around for practice, that you are really just waiting for the next session where we can bully Dennis Miller, right? I mean, this guy.
Yeah.
Now
he's so good. So good though. He's getting worse and worse hourly, right?
Bop bop bop.
Well, there was a period of time where we thought we were talking about Dennis Miller in
it's like a postmortem
in past tense. But Dennis Miller has come roaring back with a whole
series.
Well,
his comedy died. His comedy died, Sam. That's why we were sad.
His comedy died, but it has been resurrected. Not coincidentally, we're doing this segment after Easter. In many respects, I think there has been a resurrection. On April 16th, 2018, I will read from the preface of Dennis Miller's new column on Breitbart. The column is entitled "Methinks," and. There is a preface from senior management at Breitbart. In fact, we know it's from senior management because it is entitled "Note from Senior Management." And this is italicized, so you know it's true. Nobody had more respect and admiration for Dennis Miller than Andrew Breitbart.
I believe that.
I believe that, too.
I did read that.
I believe that, too. I would say nobody had respect and admiration for Dennis Miller other than Andrew
Breitbart.
Right,
and in the sense of like, that guy was super funny.
Yes.
And everybody's like, okay.
He's the only guy in Hollywood who's willing to stick up against those Hollywood elites.
And returns my calls.
Right. Okay, one of Andrew's great joys was filling in as a guest host on the Dennis Miller radio show on Westwood One. They were connected.
Oh, no.
They were connected by humor, insight, and the shared belief that conservative ideas can be advanced through culture. We're excited that things have come full circle, and we welcome Dennis to Breitbart News. There we go.
What a great publication this is. And that, you know how they always say, these guys really know how to really appeal to the young people. Note from senior management.
Right, exactly.
That's how they appeal to the young people.
This is super hip. And so let me just tell you, the first piece is entitled "Methinks." .. Take Trump down or pipe down. which Wait, is an interesting sort of...
Dude, it's a note from senior management. Apparently a comedian I never heard of was super admired by another guy that I never heard of. Exactly. And they're both into racism. Awesome. We'll fucking snap this.
Take Trump down or pipe down. Start impeachment proceedings now. And then, of course, there is the bop, 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 which is just simply understood. It's not actually printed. We just...
The bop, bop, bop is implicit.
It's implicit. Bop, bop, bop. And
Where's your impeachment proceedings now? That's my Edward G. Robinson.
And, of course, it hits all of the points you would imagine in the first piece by...
There's a great joke in the first line. There's a great, unbelievable wordplay joke. He says, he goes, in the second year A.D., get this, after Donald.
Mm. Huh? Now, it's weird because actually A.D.
That is actually a thing.
Well, A.D. is actually a thing, but it's after death. And so Donald has not died yet. He's got a little bit confused, but that's okay.
Is Dennis Miller and Alex Jones both subconsciously wishing that this happens here?
It's possible. I mean, it would make it all just go away in a clean way. But it does take him almost four paragraphs to get to Hillary Clinton. So good for him in that instance. But now,
restraint. That's restraint.
And not only is he roaring back with methinks on Breitbart,
pop, pop,
he also has come out with the new Miller Minute. And blessedly...
don't even know about this.
Yes, blessedly, Westwood One has given us an opportunity to sample. In fact, this one is called Miller Minute Sample One. Listen to this.
The Miller Minute with Dennis Miller.
I want to talk about tea, sometimes referred to as the dignified breakfast beverage. Whereas coffee shreds into your day like a liquefied Eddie Van Halen guitar solo, a nice cup of tea is far less jarring. Think George Harrison strumming the opening chords to Here Comes the Sun. Sure, sometimes you need the gut punch that only coffee can deliver, but as a man looks forward to his dotage, you realize you can only take so many Jake LaMotta uppercuts before the final bell, which calls for a more calming start to the day. Sipping an English breakfast tea, an Earl Grey, or if you're feeling adventurous, a Darjeeling. Tea drinking is such a refined pastime, our cousins across the pond stop everything midday for slow-brewed leafy refreshment, and Brits usually don't drop everything unless there are rumors of new Meghan Markle beach photos. Speaking of the beach, let's not forget iced tea. Is there anything better on a hot day than a tall glass of iced tea? Oh yeah, lemonade. But how great is it to pour that lemonade into a half a glass of fresh-brewed iced tea for a refreshing Arnold Palmer? Try doing that with an iced coffee. And that is the Minute.
Bop, bop.
Oh, my God. It's like an angry Larry King. Angry Larry King is back.
I don't even... I mean, seriously, guys.
Do yourself
bop,
a favor.
Bop.
Do yourself a favor, Michael, and try some tea.
I don't even...
I wasn't prepared for that. We should have listened to that beforehand. I am like, I was speechless during the... Wait, he's doing the... I'm gonna use my best. I'm gonna boil down all my tea material to just 1 minute, and I'm gonna lay it all in there. I'm gonna concentrate this baby. We're gonna sell it. Wow.
Darjeeling. Remember, Darjeeling. Darjeeling was the punchline of that.
Yeah, you
gotta
say, but you have to say it. Darjeeling.
Well, the bit where he talks about how every single day they stop everything they do for a bit of tea, and then. But usually they don't stop everything they do except for nudes of Meghan Markle or whatever they were saying.
What does that mean? I didn't even understand that one. What is that? Explain that to me.
Who's Meghan Markle?
She's,
I think I know, but who is she?
She's Prince Harry's, I think, fiance.
You know who Meghan Markle is, you fucking Stugatz. You
know
his money on the big...
You know
this
what?
This guy's saying he doesn't know who fucking Meghan Markle is.
She's, I guess she is Prince Harry's girlfriend. And
get to your smart news app, dude.
No, but here's the thing.
Oh, I do know her. I do know her. She's marrying Prince Harry.
Yes.
Right?
That, you know why that
was... Is that what you just said?
Yeah. You know why that was sort of jarring is that that is a reference to something that is not 40 years old. Everything else in there, like Jake LaMotta was a boxer... Featured in a movie that was 30 years after Jake LaMotta was a boxer, which was 40 years ago, I think, Raging Bull, right? That was like in the 80s.
No, that was like, I think it might have even been 79. That's a pretty old movie.
Really? Is it that old?
Raging Bull. I mean, maybe 80.
Now, Eddie Van Halen.
80 on the dot.
Yeah. Ripping through a guitar solo. I mean, we heard that at least 25 years ago. Then who else did he reference in there? Jake LaMotta. Oh, George Harrison. Yes.
Oh, that, yeah.
That's
opening
why.
Opening strum of... Here Comes the Sun.
That's what the Meghan Markle really threw you off, because you could actually search Google and get a hit within the past 24 hours, never mind like the past 4 or 5 years. Let's go, if you can, to Miller Minute Sample 2.
But there's this weird thing.
Wait, do you want to guess what the topic is going to be for Sample 2?
Seward's Folly? Is it Seward's Folly? Is that what the topic is?
Nancy Pelosi is dumb as illustrated through the original Batman series.
I think it's going to be something more cultural, because if he's starting with T, the next thing's going to be like...
No, he's ramping up.
It's going to be like I would say...
A college campuses?
Airplanes.
Yeah, college campuses.
Airplanes or problems with cars.
My vote is college campuses.
The Miller Minute with Dennis Miller.
I want to talk about movie theaters. In a lot of ways, the movie-going experience has been so vastly improved in recent years, it's hard to complain about ticket prices that have ballooned like, well, like Leonardo DiCaprio's salary. There's something to be said for choosing a luxurious reclining seat.
Pause it. So ticket prices have gone up like Leo DiCaprio's payments have gone up.
It's more of a causal relationship than a metaphor.
You're paying more for tickets, and Depp's making more money.
Things have gotten expensive. Like, things have gotten expensive around here. Bop, bop, bop. Good. Now,
hey,
now
do
pause
I have to take
it.
Out
now,
a loan to get a piece of gum?
I want to say, to be fair, we don't know if these things were written or just completely off the cuff, like he was walking down the street. So we don't know how much time went into these.
Yeah, you can't tell. It doesn't sound written at all, right?
Ticket prices that have ballooned like, well, like Leonardo DiCaprio's salary. There's something to be said for choosing a luxurious reclining seat before leaving home and then being offered gluten-free, free-range chicken sliders. Yet I can't help but be nostalgic for the days where you forked over a 10-spot for the broken seat on the end of the aisle, popcorn that tasted indistinguishable from
Pause
the
corn. Pause it for 1 second. Are you also going to say, like, I love how the straw man here, there are probably a dozen theaters in the country where you could go and order food there, and they are only in like the places that Dennis Miller frequents.
Well, that's the but art of Dennis Miller. Yes. He's just like, I'm a middle America kind of normal guy, and like my other brothers who just have a hard day's work, I'm so tired of organic gluten-free sliders at the theater and lesbians holding hands in front of me and transgender people at your favorite coffee shops, independent bookstores, and high-end car dealerships. Just like the average guy in Peoria.
I'm like the average guy who just has gone through his day being annoyed with everything that he does in Malibu.
Yeah, popcorn that tasted
indistinguishable. He has a great Juju Bees chuck about the movie.
Here it comes.
Chuckles.
Here it comes.
End spot for the broken seat on the end of the aisle, popcorn that tasted indistinguishable from the cardboard it was served in, and a box of Junior Mints from the Mesozoic era. Not to mention your feet stuck to the floor for no extra charge. The one way the movie-going experience hasn't improved is the movies themselves. There's a direct correlation between your ability to recline and the decline in the quality of what's on the screen. The worse the movies, the nicer the theaters. We're one Fast and Furious away from movies projected directly onto the ceilings of individual private movie pods like those hotels in Japan. When that happens, just stay home. And that's the minute. I'm Dennis Miller.
I liked it. When it becomes like the Japs, you just stay home there, see?
Well, like those private pods that none of you have experienced.
Yeah, I like
except
that.
Except for me.
No, maybe even
like
not
I'm
him.
I'm stuck in those pods again in Malibu.
Maybe not even him. He went from like a Malibu film experience to like, oh, you mean like some IMAX theater in Kyoto that even you haven't been to?
Right.
Yeah.
Or
way
maybe
to really reflect on the frustrations of the white worker.
Here, all right. So let's, what's this next one is going to be?
Shouldn't he be doing private jet? Shouldn't he be doing bits about?
Wait, there's going to be a plane thing like
riding the private jet.
Yeah. Like, what's going on here with this whole thing where you don't even have to go through customs on your private jet? And then they the one stewardess comes down there and you're alone and
you can't touch Billy's masseuse on a private jet anymore. Let's just get to the point. All right. My guess again is college campuses. I'm going double or nothing.
He hasn't done planes or cars. What is it?
He's stayed sort of apolitical.
It's got to get political.
No, it's totally apolitical.
It is apolitical.
Oh, yeah. No, I think this is going to be
the movie theater's total subtext is political.
Or it's going to be complaining about the music. Here we go.
The Miller Minute with Dennis Miller.
Want to talk about onion rings? The red-headed stepchild of side dishes, lacking the cachet of French fries or the regional popularity of hush puppies, somehow the onion ring still sneaks its way onto every menu. The fact that onion rings have any degree of popularity is miraculous when you consider the lack of culinary value in the onion itself. Sure, you might slice one up to add to your burger or an occasional French onion soup, but has anyone in human history found themselves with a hunger that can only be satiated by a bulbous, albino, tear-inducing onion? The fact that anyone ever consciously orders onion rings has nothing to do with the onion itself, but rather a testament to the superiority of frying as a food preparation. I know health nuts don't put much stock in the deep fryer, but we always come back to deep fry, a process that so improves the taste of food, well, it might even make vegan food palatable.
Onion rings.
Oh my God! All right, can I say this?
Careful, Dennis. Careful.
I'm missing. Where is the pro-Iraq invasion xenophobia? Because this is really boring.
I know, it's unbelievable. I'm gonna. You know what? No. I'm gonna take on onions today. Boom.
My favorite line was the occasional French onion soup. The occasional.
Onions rarely make their way into anything that's cooked. That's
except for the occasional French onion soup.
And do you notice how his homage to his like Bill O'Reilly audience is always it's like movie theaters where the queers go in, vegan food's bland.
Yeah,
like
right.
That's how he's trying to keep them looped in.
Actually, almost everything fried is like a vegetable, like in that respect. Like,
yeah.
French fries,
right.
Onion rings.
And the old, like
back off on the Crisco. Back off on the Crisco, choo-choo.
All right, listen, we're only going to play one more of these because we want the other three samples, because maybe there'll be more samples that come in the future, but we need to make sure that we, like, save those other three samples, all right? We got to maybe download those even. All right, so the final Dennis Miller sample of the day, I'm going to just extend my guess. Planes, cars, or it could be trains, but I don't think he ever has a chance to get on a train, so he wouldn't ever. It's either planes, cars, and wait, did I say last time vegetables? No, I didn't.
I'm actually going to go out of the box here. I'm going to say some type of like kids crying in public places and lack
that's
of discipline
a good one.
Thing.
I'm guessing sports.
Yeah. Sports could be one. I feel like it also could be something that he gets from a retail store that he doesn't like a bag. Like, I'm sick of these bags with handles or something.
Right,
like.
Right.
I'm going to say Uber.
Uber.
Hey, look, shot shop paper.
Dude, Uber was great.
You stick it in the back of Bing Boo Bop.
All these ride sharing. What about? Yeah, he could do like, you know, like these.
I don't know. If there was an Uber of the 1990s, maybe. But I'm saying Uber is way too recent for a
gig
reference.
Economy. Yeah. All right, here we go.
The Miller Minute with Dennis Miller.
I want to talk about Toys R Us. The retail giant has announced they will close or sell all their stores, laying off thousands of employees in the process. This has led to countless reports that this reinforces how difficult it is for specialized stores to operate in the age of online retail and the proliferation of so-called big box stores like Walmart and Costco. But when you click past the headline, you realize the toy giant was nearly $5 billion in debt.
Pause
and I don't
it,
care what.
Second. Pause it 1 second. He didn't write this one.
That's exactly what I'm thinking. There's no way that he wrote any of these.
This is the Ronald Reagan one where it's paid for by a corporation that's secretly underwriting me. Bop, bop, bop.
This is different from the other ones. Hear just
one of
the
these is not like the other. Darjeeling tea, blah, 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 versus like, now, well, actually, if you really look at it, Toys R Us needed to pay back their creditors.
Well,
if,
here's the question. Here's the question. He has set it up that they're larded up with debt. Now, the story of Toys R Us is actually like a very, very telling story of the financialization of our economy. Where it was a leverage buyout, where you have basically hedge funders come in, they borrow money to buy Toys R Us, then they transfer essentially that debt to Toys R Us, and they as individuals just get paid out in fees as either corporate executive board members or just the fees for basically doing the transaction. And then Toys R Us is saddled with this enormous amount of debt that was taken out for these guys just to buy it. This is a leveraged buyout. This is what has destroyed many companies around the country. Toys R Us actually accounted for something like 20% of all toy sales in the country. It could have existed. 33,000 people laid off. Where do you think he's going with this?
Listening to Sam Cedar explain the Toys R Us room is like Rain Man in the Bon Bon room in the 1990s.
He could be. He could be actually criticizing. He could be going there.
No, it's not going to happen.
He could be.
Right, right. That would be a good take.
No way. Let's see. No way.
Let's see.
Retail and the proliferation of so-called big box stores like Walmart and Costco. But when you click past the headline, you realize the toy giant was nearly $5 billion in debt. And I don't care what you're selling. At some point, when you're that far in the red, there's no amount of tickle me in space Elmos that can take your business into the future. It's time to grow up. There will be no more Toys R Us kids. Personally, I think that they were done in by their disregard for the English language. The backwards R always struck me as irresponsible when your core customers are young children. But also the grammatical error in the name of the store, which should have always been We Are Toys. And that is The Minute. I'm Dennis Miller.
Oh.
Wow.
He thinks saying Elmo in space is updating the Elmo reference.
Now the guy who wrote that one, I mean, this was like, you know, the first three were by the same writer, it seems to me. That fourth one, it was Dennis Miller, like, I'm going to do something a little bit hard-hitting. I mean, he must like that idea of, like, fiscal discipline. But, boy, he went down that road about, if you click past the headlines, then you just see one number, and then we just go back to making fun of the grammatical error involved in the name.
If you click past the headlines, you'll see the first stat that every lead graph on that story used.
Right.
There wasn't a single story on Toys R Us that didn't begin with its losses.
Right. Like, if you click
real dig work there.
If you click past the headline, you'll see the sub headline,
right,
which says how much they were in debt.
He never said. He doesn't say click past the headline. That's how you know he doesn't. He didn't write it.
Yeah,
he doesn't even know what click means.
No, the first half is somebody else. The second half, where it's like the spelling's weird. See, that's him.
Let's see. Toys R Us. I'm just curious. I'm going to come up with like the news stories. Let's see if you even have to click past the headline back then. Let's see. Now, these are old. But
you know, the only good thing that Ben Shapiro would be good for would be is if he put his attention into being a pedantic little prick about Dennis Miller. He's like, okay, first of all, this doesn't make any logical sense. Then it's an out-of-date reference, okay? And then number three, I don't know if I would be the grammar police here.
I feel like that is our gig.
It is our gig, but I would like to see that Shapiro. The same reason he explained that, like, Hamilton wasn't good because rap is
Dennis, do you really think that kids are spelling or writing R backwards just because it's on the sign of that?
Yeah, okay. I know that it's a nice punchline, but it doesn't withstand logical scrutiny.
He's like a fascist Edwin Newman. Am I right, people? Everybody knows my reference.
So, Andy, let's wrap this up because it is 4:20.
Nice.
And I understand that you smoke marijuana or have.
I love pot.
I know.
Oh, you're a big... It's my new bit.
My
new character.
Play that for Andy.
Okay. And so I thought maybe...
This is good.
Andy
this
Kindler,
is very Andy.
420, what would capture both these things? Oh, I know. Chuck Schumer talking about decriminalization. Here is a... Here is a clip of Chuck Schumer on 420 talking about decriminalizing marijuana.
I'll be introducing legislation to decriminalize marijuana at the federal level from one end of the country to the other. The legislation is long overdue based on, you know, a bunch of different facts. I've seen too many people's lives ruined because they had small amounts of marijuana and served time in jail much too long. Ultimately, it's the right thing to do. Freedom. If smoking marijuana doesn't hurt anybody else, why should we allow people to do it and not make it criminal?
Boom, there you go. Wow,
great posture.
What do you think, Andy?
That's great. I like the way he's not afraid on 420 to have a sense of humor.
If it doesn't involve the Israelis being able to kill or gas whoever they want, whenever they want, or regulating certain very exotic forms of derivatives, I'm negotiable. So light up, Schwatzes. We need your votes.
AIPAC has said that very few Palestinians are going to exercise their marijuana rights.
That's another reason to support Israel. If you go to Tel Aviv, you can light up grade A hashisha and listen to, Afro Man or Bob Marley on the beach. Just a couple of miles away from there is a Palestinian government where you can't talk. So they shouldn't be allowed freedom of movement. Am I right, young people?
These farmers on the settlements growing beautiful green plants.
Growing beautiful organic ganja for a global trade. But the Palestinians, maybe they don't like weed the way they don't like Torah.
And I had a couple of my friends down on Wall Street said that there's a lot of money to invest in this. And they got some hedge funds.
They said that their investment in their marijuana business might artificially inflate the next bubble they're creating through illegal insider trading. So it sounds like a win-win for everyone.
This is a wonderful way to juice the real estate market. So juice. Yes, oh, I said juice, real estate market.
Hey, was that really made for today, that ad? Was that like coming out in 420?
I think Vice probably, yeah, I think they probably did do that. Is that today? He introduced it today.
So how come there's no reggae? How come reggae's not playing in the background?
That was weird background music.
Was too tense. Actually, Matt, we should bed later a proper background for that.
Like we should play
like Reggae Ambassador by Third World.
could you hit us with that right now?
Can we find it? It should be easy to find.
So, Andy, when are you coming east? When are you going to be back in New York?
I am coming east for my nephew's wedding in June.
Okay.
And I can't believe I haven't been there at all.
I think we need to do this.
New York has fallen out of love with me.
Well, you haven't been to New York. You know what? I mean, we're gonna schedule a live show.
Come do a live show with us.
We'll come do a live show with us, maybe.
That would be great.
That's an awesome
idea. Where are you going to do it?
I don't know.
The Bell House?
Bell House, maybe, is high on the list.
Well, if you do a live show with us, you think maybe you'll include your frequent appearances and your future variety coverage, Andy?
We got to get you. The point is, we're now the clock is ticking before this movie comes out, because otherwise,
you won't get me. Get me at the old price, you mean?
Yeah. All right, Andy.
Hey, don't forget my. I have a podcast, and so don't forget it. It's Thought Spiral. Everybody
Thought listens. Spiral. Why didn't you plug that in the thing?
I'm doing it. I will now.
Okay. Well, I appreciate
this. I had so much fun on this appearance, gentlemen.
Oh, Andy, always a pleasure for us. Now, if people wanted to go see you, it's probably sold out, I would imagine, right?
And I don't know. I'll be at the Moon Tower Comedy Festival tonight and tomorrow on various different shows.
All right. Well, if you go to Moon Tower and you see Andy Kindler, say hi for us.
Love you, Andy.
I love you guys.
Bye.
Have a good weekend.
Andy Kindler, bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen. Andy Kindler. And, of course, it is 420. And, of course, we would, on 420, expect that Jimmy Reefer Cake...
The plants do it.
Would...
Even the birds and the bees. So you gotta legalize it. That's what Peter Tosh said, young lady.
That puts a lot of pressure on... That puts a lot of pressure on Cuomo, right? I mean, does it make Cuomo look like... Wait, Chuck Schumer just got out ahead
you
of you?
You look like
this?
A real square, Andrew.
Yes!
The other thing that I like about
Andy,
this
loosen
is,
up.
It's not an ideological disagreement, but I did enjoy sort of fucking Cuomo on this, making him very uncomfortable.
Imagine Cuomo goes into Schumer's office and it smells faintly like marijuana. Like what would go through his mind?
Chuck's like, I put you in a little bit of a pickle, didn't they?
If you don't get,
why
you
are you giggling
if you don't
so
cough,
much?
You don't get off.
Where's my hacky sack, goddammit? God. No, in 3 weeks, Andrew Cuomo is going to do it. And he's going to be like, I am Peter Tosh. I am the marijuana distributor.
Couple of pieces of news before we play the Jimmy Reefer Cake song. One is that it appears now that Politico is reporting that Foster Freeze, you remember him? He's the one who supported Rick Santorum in 2012. He's the one who said the way that for birth, the best birth control for women is aspirin. And you take an aspirin and you hold it in between your knees. I remember that because I was told that by a similarly situated Irish Catholic man.
Really?
30 years ago when I was dating his daughter. 35 years ago, high school.
Like, I could navigate around that, sir.
Also, and this is interesting.
He's also a Turning Points USA guy. Foster Freeze.
This is interesting. The DNC is suing Russia, WikiLeaks, Assange, Misfud, Trump Jr., and the campaign for the DNC hacks. And this is interesting because it indicates that they're not afraid of anything coming out in discovery. You know, you don't, I mean, we just saw Cohen drop his suits against, I think it was BuzzFeed and one other organization, because they were afraid, like, oh, if we go through this, we actually have to, these attorneys are going to ask us for stuff.
Well, don't want this to be discovered, Michael.
So this is, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, just this process.
Well, with this lawsuit, maybe you'll finally have your fondest wish, World War III with Russia, Shillery, mini MSNBC, Sam the Cook. Sell out.
There you go. Just a reminder, we hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Majority Report, presented by Smart News. Say goodbye to fake news, nasty trolls, and the filter bubble of your social networks, folks. What, you think you're getting all the news? Who do you follow on social media?
News outlet wise?
No, what? I mean, like, you know, you're
no,
most
of course,
people
no,
get
you gotta
news
get out
Facebook.
Of you gotta get out of your bubble for sure.
I do that. Get your news in 1 minute from 300 trusted media sources with Smart News. It's available for free in the Apple App Store or the Google Play Store. All right, let's play this Jimmy Reefer Cake song, and we'll use it to we'll use it to outro the show.
Sure.
Just a reminder, this show relies on your membership to continue, folks, day in, day out. We do the show, and we give it to folks for free, to thousands upon thousands of folks for free, listen to the free part of the show. And we rely on the support of our members to do so. And as a way of saying thank you to those members, we give them a little extra content every day. Sometimes it's a lot of extra content. Sometimes it's too much extra content. And we make it, it's up to you to filter out what parts you want to hear and which ones you don't. I don't know why I go into that Chuck Schumer voice. It works.
It works.
So you can become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, don't forget TMBS. You can sign up on iTunes. Check it out on our YouTube channel and Jamie's Patreon at patreon.com/JamiePeck for both her writings, which are all available for free, and Antifada, the podcast that she's launched. All right, here is Jimmy Reefer Cake song. And folks, this is sort of shocking. I don't even understand this, but it is 4:20. And literally, like, I click on the Jimmy Reefer Cake song. All it says is Reefer Madness Should End. Doesn't even mention 4:20. Dude, what the frick? Are you high?
Priorities, I got priorities. They're talking about Stormy Daniels, fucking Trump. I'm thinking about the war in the Middle East. A priority. Oh, priorities. They all look at them but no CIA. I'm thinking about the people that died here. Let's see. I'm thinking about real fucking peace. Priorities. Oh, priorities. These motherfuckers don't give a fuck. That's what I see about my priorities. Priorities. So don't point your finger at me unless you can have a civilized discussion about priorities. About Russia messing with the election. I'm talking about legalizing the priorities. Oh, priorities. That's why they're making a defection from the useless Democratic Party. Oh, they're talking about Trumpy. I don't give a fuck. I never had any motherfucking luck with any of them. Trumpy, but look what I'm doing, motherfuckers. I'm legalizing weed state by state. Stop the hate. The reefer madness must end.
Wow. I don't have my soundboard to give the applause. And I would say, like, Jimmy seems to have, like, taken Michael's Learning Annex class of adding swears to everything.